Reading is Romans 13, verses 1 to 7, page 1140 of the Church Bible. Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and he will commend you. For he is God's servant to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. This is also why you pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants, who give their full time to governing. Give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honour, then honour.
I laughed when I saw the title, Paying Taxes, because apart from a brief six-month period around 1994, I haven't paid any tax since 1980. But in case the tax office is listening to this sermon, I'm not being fraudulent. It's just that, first of all, I was raising a family, and the work I do now is unpaid. So the thrill of keeping our tax affairs in order falls to my husband, which, as those of you who know me with rows and rows of figures will know, is an extraordinary relief. Before we look at today's reading in more detail, we need to remember the context of these verses, because they are a continuation of Paul's theme that Christians should live differently to those around them. Romans 12:2 says, "Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." Also Romans 12:17 and 21. "Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with God." And it's this challenge to do what is right and to overcome evil with good which underpins Paul's challenge in Romans 13 to submit to local governing authorities. Paul wasn't being naive. He knew all too well that governing powers aren't always what they should be. Paul lived in a totalitarian state. Christians were at the bottom of the pecking order and had few, if any, rights. When they were mistreated, they must have been tempted to retaliate. But Paul knew that this would discredit the gospel, as well as giving the Roman authorities even more reason to target them. And as an example of this, at one time there was an enormous fire in Rome, and it was the Christians who were accused of setting the fire. There was no evidence that they had done this, and almost certainly they hadn't done it. It just gives you an idea about the assumptions that Romans made about Christians, that they were the dirt. They were at the bottom of the heap. So Paul didn't want Christians to rebel against local authority, because then they'd be giving local authority even more grounds for dismissing them. Moreover, Paul believed that God is a God of order and not of anarchy. So for God, even imperfect government is better than no government at all. And certainly, as far as we're concerned, imperfect government is better than no government at all. So take the London riots in 2011. And those of us who watched this develop on our screens saw how quickly law and order descended into fear and terror. Without the rapid response of the police and other authorities, the troubles would have spread much further and much faster. It was only because the police and those working with them got on top of it as soon as they could that it stopped spreading and spreading and spreading. Another example is the rise of knife crime in London, especially between rival gangs. And for those of you who can't read the small print, essentially the darker the colour, the higher the level of knife crime in London. And the darkest colour is 70 plus incidents between 2012 and 2016. But actually, as we know, in recent months, knife crime at the moment in London seems to be on the rise, and there seems to be very little positive news coming out of it, which doesn't mean the authorities aren't working to solve the problem, but it is just a massive, massive problem. And this too shows how violence and disorder can spread whenever people take justice into their own hands. And this is not what God wants. He desires order and not anarchy. Paul also held to the Jewish and then the Christian belief that all authority exists only because God permits it. And that was true of Rome as it was true elsewhere. And Paul is so clear about this that he says it twice for emphasis. Romans 13, 1 and 2. Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Now, these words would have shocked Nero and other Roman emperors who believed or claimed to believe that they were divine. They thought they held power in their own right. They called themselves God. To them, it would have been unthinkable that they were actually God's servants and that they only held office because God had given them the authority and the gift of doing so. Especially that it was the God of Israel who was giving them authority and power. But Paul was only repeating something that Jesus himself said. In John 19, 10 to 11, Jesus was brought before Pilate for questioning. This was in the days immediately before his crucifixion. And Pilate says to Jesus, "Do you refuse to speak to me? Don't you realize that I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" And Jesus' answer was this: "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above." This is Paul speaking to this is Jesus speaking to a Roman governor, telling him, "You don't have any power. The only power you have is because God is giving it to you." As well as proclaiming God's authority over Rome, Jesus also refused to use violence to defend himself. When he was arrested, he prevented his disciples from taking the law into their own hands. Matthew 26, 52, "Put your sword back in its place, for all who draw the sword will die by the sword." Violence is never God's way, because it always results in more violence. And throughout his life, the message that Jesus gave was that his disciples were to love those around them. They were to honor them. They were to respect them. they were to bless them. So, for example, he said, you know, if someone demands that you carry their things, carry them for 2 miles. Don't just carry them for one. Do more than. He's saying, if you follow me, you know, you've got to be a blessing to those around you. You're not, if someone slaps you on the cheek, turn the other cheek. Don't resort to violence. Don't resort to violence. It only results in more violence. And Paul's conclusion is that when we rebel against authority, it's as if we're rebelling against God himself, which may make us feel a bit uncomfortable. He who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. Because here's the thing, most of us don't actually like some aspects of authority. And often this is based on our own experiences where people have maybe treated us badly or unjustly or unfairly. And so our attitude is often to disrespect authority. And I read an article in the paper which said most people have no respect whatsoever for the authority of the land. They've got no respect for government. They've got no respect for local authorities. But Paul is saying, actually, these authorities are in place because God wants order and not anarchy. And Paul tells the Roman church they're to do what is right so that they'll be free from fear and have a clear conscience before God as well as before the authorities. Romans 13, verse 3, do you want to be free from fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right and he will commend you. For he is God's servant to do you good. Incidentally, that word servant must have really rankled the Roman authorities, because actually it was a reminder that they were there to serve. They weren't there to lord it over the people that they were responsible for. They were there to serve them. And they would come under God's justice for doing wrong. And actually, that's true of our local authorities, our government. Those we elect are in position not to lord it over those they are meant to serve. They are there to serve. They are there to serve. And that's the challenge. That is really the challenge. And we need to pray for those who are in local authorities. We need to pray for those who are in parliament. And it may be that God is calling us to get more involved, actually, in local politics. Because what often happens is Christians can sort of say, well, I want to do the work of God. So they get very busy in churches, but they don't actually involve themselves in society. But actually, there should be more of a Christian voice in local authority, in parliament. And there are Christian politicians, and there are Christian people who serve on local authorities, but so often the church is guilty of sort of making a separation and sort of saying, well, you know, we're doing God's thing here, but we don't get involved with politics, we distance ourselves from it. But what God says is actually, I have given people authority because the world needs a measure of authority. And even where authority is wrong and damaged, God would still prefer it to no authority at all. And maybe the answer to damaged authority is for people who are Christian and who understand the call to serve and the call to love and the call to bless the vulnerable, need to step up and say, well, actually, maybe I ought to be getting more involved with what's happening at a local level. It's a thought. It's a thought. So this word servant that Paul uses was a reminder to the authorities in Rome that they didn't have a blank check allowing them to do whatever they wanted with the power that they held. They needed to do the right thing. And Paul had no hesitation correcting the authorities when they got things wrong. He knew the law. He was quick to use it in his defence. And there were several occasions when he got into trouble. He was facing authority because of his preaching and because of his healing. Sometimes the places, the towns that he visited, didn't like what he was doing. And Paul used the law to get out of trouble. He would refer to his Roman citizenship, for example, to say, you know, actually, if you're going to arrest me, you've got to do it properly. So he knew the law, and that's another interesting thing, that often we don't actually know the law, but God wants us to be well informed. He wants us to understand how to use the system to bring about what is right. Paul also used his knowledge to defend himself against the Jewish religious establishment. In Acts 23, he was brought before the Jewish Sanhedrin. And as he was speaking, the high priest ordered someone to strike Paul on the mouth as a way of saying, you know, stop talking. And it was illegal for him to make that order. And Paul instantly responded. Now, he must have wanted to slap the high priest back. But actually, it becomes clear from what happens next is that he didn't actually know the identity of the man who'd ordered that he be struck. So he's quite vituperative in his words. God will strike you, you whitewashed wall. You sit there to judge me according to the law, yet you yourself violate the law by commanding that I be struck. Now, whitewashed wall might not seem like much of an insult. I don't think I've ever heard anyone in Kingston call someone a whitewashed wall. But actually, in that society, it was equivalent of calling someone a hypocrite. Because if you whitewash a wall, you're covering over what's underneath. So it's like he's saying, you know, you may be virtuous on the outside, but my golly, you're as mucky as anything inside. And also it was how they painted their tombs. So their tombs were whitewashed. So they were pure on the inside, but of course to Jews, a tomb wasn't somewhere that you went to, unless you were dead, obviously, or mourning. That's a silly thing for me to say. But they were regarded as unclean because of the whole putrefaction of the body and that kind of thing. You would not touch a body. You would not go near a tomb unless it was necessary as part of a mourning ritual. So he's essentially saying to this guy, you know, you're a grubby piece of work. Even though you look good on the outside, you know, you're not nice inside. And what happened, of course, was that the people around in the Sanhedrin immediately said to Paul, hang on a minute, you're being incredibly rude, and this is the high priest. And what happens is that Paul instantly apologizes for not recognizing that he is the high priest. But he doesn't withdraw his charge that the high priest had acted illegally. So Paul respects the authority and the position of high priest, but that doesn't prevent him challenging the office holder for doing what is wrong. And this actually gives us an example of how we should face injustice. You know, violence isn't the answer. Slapping someone back when they slap us, in a sense, whether physically or metaphorically, isn't the answer. We should always use legal means to achieve our aims. Otherwise, we're no better than our adversaries. Paul was always very careful to avoid giving the authorities grounds for accusing him. He knew that this would inhibit the spread of the gospel, and we have to be careful, because as Christians, we're the public face of God. When we break the law, we damage God's reputation. But Paul shows us that we can use the law robustly to defend ourselves and to defend the rights of others. But we have to do things legally. And so we come to this question of taxes. Well, taxes were as unpopular in Paul's day as they are now. And I found a wonderful piece of writing by Tacitus, thanks to the commentary that Simon lent me. And apparently Rome was in uproar because of corruption. And, I mean, this could be something that's happening now, really. Tax officials were exacting more than required, and some were even inventing names to cover up their illegal transactions, sort of like presumably inventing people who didn't exist so that they could cover up why they suddenly had so much money. And rebellion was in the air. And no doubt the Christians who were at the bottom of the heap were suffering more than most. And Paul's response? Don't use this as an excuse to indulge in illegal activity. Don't resort to violence, but pay what you owe, because this is how the rule of law and order is maintained. Romans 13:7. Give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, revenue. If respect, respect. If honour, then honour. And Roman taxation was also a vexed issue in Judea in Jesus' day. Jews were expected to pay tribute money to the emperor. And just as an aside, this coin, the one on the right, says Huius Zoter. And Augustus, Caesar Augustus, was saying, I'm the son of God, I'm saviour. So that was the kind of thing that the Jews were up against, that the Roman officials were saying things which to them were completely blasphemous. I think I've got that right. I'm not sure. I'm sure I'm not. I've got it wrong. Simon's going to tell me. Oh, right. Okay. But it's similar. Chief. Yes, son of God on the right hand, on the left hand coin, and chief priest on the other. So I was in the right direction. I just got the side of the coin wrong, which just shows I'm useless with money. Whether it's a Roman, denarius or a pound coin, I don't know one side of the coin from the other. But this coin was offensive to the Jews because not only were they being asked to pay taxes to their Roman overlords, whom they absolutely despised, but the coin itself was heavy with meaning. It was Caesar saying, basically, I'm the son of God and I'm the high priest, I'm the chief priest. And of course, that was anathema to them, because for them, obviously, he wasn't. So they did everything they could to not pay the tax. And actually, there's a Jesus' enemies tried to catch Jesus out over this, because they came to him and said, is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? And Jesus knew that if he said no, he'd be accused of treason and reported to the governor and punished. If he said yes, he'd be accused of disloyalty to the Jewish people. It was a lose-lose as opposed to a win-win. Whatever he said, whether he said no or yes, he'd lose. Jesus' response, show me the coin, he said. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. And actually, this is true for us today. You know, we are to do what the law requires. We're to pay tax to Caesar. In our case, it's paying money to the local authority for the privilege of living in Kingston and helping to support services in Kingston Borough or Surbiton or wherever we live. We're also required to pay tax to the government to help with the funding of all the various things that happen around the country. We may not like it, but we're meant to do this. We're meant to live lives that are above reproach. And we can't cherry pick the bits of authority that we like. I think there's a supreme irony about the story of Jesus and Pilate, which I only really thought about when I was writing this sermon. The Jewish people hated being under the rule and authority of Rome. And we see that in their response to this taxation that they were expected to pay. They did everything to undermine Rome that they could. And yet at the same time, the crowds were happy enough to call on the very authority they despised when they wanted to have Jesus killed. So with one hand, they're saying, oh, we won't pay the tax, we'll undermine you as much as possible. And then on the other side, they said, oh, well, actually, we like this bit of law because under it we can have Jesus killed. We can't pick and choose which bits of law we want to obey. We can't do it. We can't do it. If everyone chose something different, anarchy would result. And I'm just using the example of the highway code, traffic lights. If we obey some of the highway code, but not all of it, we put others, if not ourselves, in danger. If some people observe red lights and other people drive straight through them, sooner or later, tragedy will strike. Or if some people decide to drive the wrong way down a one-way road, anything could happen. There's a whole number of scenarios. If you just look at the highway code and imagine some people obeying the rules and some people not, it would be an absolute smash-up. We cannot pick and choose what we obey. And yet, there are times when God's law must take priority over other authorities. In Acts 4:19 and 5:29, Peter and John refused to obey the Sanhedrin's command to stop speaking about Jesus. At that point, God's authority overruled. There will be times in our lives when we may be asked to do something or sign up to something that we know is wrong. And it takes enormous courage to stand up and say, actually, I'm not prepared to do that, because it goes against what I believe God would want me to do. That can cost us. I just want to finish with a story. When I was interviewed for the Foreign Office in 1976, I realized they knew far more about me than I had mentioned on my application form. They had clearly done their research very carefully. And I later discovered that they had contacted my uni and that a couple of men in black or grey or brown, I don't know what colour their suits were, and they'd asked a lot of questions about me. And at the end of the interview, the pair who were interviewing me challenged me. What would I do, they said, if we asked you to do something that went against your Christian faith? Who would you obey, us or God? I'd gone prepared for all sorts of questions about working in the Foreign Office, how I would, you know, what my passions were, etc., etc. And I thought I had prepared for everything, but I hadn't prepared for that question. And I sat there for a moment, I was in shock that was what they focused on. That was the thing they were interested in. I thought they'd ask me about why I wanted to join the Foreign Office, you know, whatever, but I didn't expect them to ask me what I would do if I had to choose between them and God, and would I do whatever they asked me. Essentially, they said, will you do whatever we ask you, even if it goes against God's law? Well, I didn't want to jeopardize my job application. I've been very pragmatic. I needed a job. But neither did I want to deny God. And I was asking myself, while I was thinking rapidly, I was thinking on my feet, were they just interested in what I might say, or was it more than that? So I decided to take the risk, and I told them that we were fortunate to live in a country whose laws are based upon a predominantly Christian ethic, and that I would be totally loyal to whoever I worked for unless they asked me to do something illegal. And I said that if it came to the point when I had to choose, I would always seek to obey God on the basis that that would always be the right thing. That was the gist of it. I didn't write down at the time what I said, but I can remember the moment. I can remember my panic and then thinking, what can I say that will be honouring to God but also not cost me the job? It could have gone either way. I never knew if it was a trick question or not, but I did get the job. Following God is hard. We are called to be different. We're called to be different out there, in our workplace, in our job, in our home, in our socialising. Sometimes it means sticking our head above the parapet. Sometimes it will make us unpopular in the eyes of others. And above all, it means living lives of integrity and love that leave no room for approach, because we are the public face of God.